open yourself to nature with the intention of learning something or of releasing something. And for me, my intention is always about like deeply connecting with nature on a regular basis as much as I can, because like it's my soul food. Nature and the diversity of life brings me the deepest and most sustainable joy I've ever experienced in life.
You're listening to Living the Unseen, the podcast where Ariana and I explore how we can incorporate spirituality into our everyday lives.
I vividly remember the first time I went on a hike with Matt Shampoo. We were casually bantering until all of a sudden he dropped to his knees in complete awe of some tiny creepy crawler that all of us overlooked. As nature is becoming a more and more prominent part of the spiritual journeys of Tanya and me, we loved hearing more about how nature, whether it's his garden or the vast forests of Peru, is Matt's ultimate guru. Let's dive in.
Oh, Matt, I know you because you are my favorite yoga teacher in San Francisco. But today I would love to talk about something else, and that is another passion that we share, nature. And I would love to start with, you know, maybe you can share a recent experience of being in nature, whether that's your awesome garden or anywhere else, and how you experience being in nature.
That's a great, very actually rich question to explore, because how we think about nature and what constitutes nature, I think, is like a very exciting space, right? Are we talking about nature with a small n or nature with a large n, right? The capital nature. So in terms of the capital nature, I feel like I'm sitting in nature right now, right? And the most immediate nature experience that I had was this morning. You could say like in proper nature, small n. I was stepping outside and wandering through my garden just to see how things are faring with the extreme temperatures that we're suffering here in the Bay Area. All of my cactus and succulents and other plants are very happy, actually. So no casualties thus far. Something that can actually happen with the plants that I grow is this is something that surprises a lot of people about the cactus and succulent spaces, that some cactus can be sunburned. Who knew? So, right, because they're not from necessarily this part of the world, they're just not adapted to our particular sun strength or temperature extremes or what have you. But that's in like a nutshell, that's nature. But I never really feel like I'm separate from nature. And if I'm lucky, I can take a deep breath and feel my lungs open and expand like tree trunks and leaves. And I can feel that I am nature, right, on a regular basis. But that's if I'm lucky. Like most of the day I'm floating around in my own cycle of sufferings and preoccupations and pleasures, whatever they might be. I forget that I am part of everything that's around me. All right. So I think of nature as home, right? My ultimate home with the capital N. And I've definitely thought about nature as my ultimate guru, my ultimate teacher for quite a long time now. So when I need sources of inspiration, when I'm feeling exhausted or whatever it is, I'll always go to nature. And just being in that space always offers something special, right? We're very fortunate to be close to the Pacific Ocean here. And last weekend we were out at the beach enjoying the vastness of, we were at Stinson Beach. You remember Stinson,
Oh, yeah.
Ariel? Yeah, it's a, Tanya, have
yeah,
you been
I
as
studied
well?
At UC Berkeley, yeah. So I remember.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so it's amazing. And it's also like really cold water if you've ever been. So I ended up doing a little bit of Wim Hof inspired swimming, or Wim Hof, as you might say, if I'm saying it properly. And it was frickin' cold. It charged me with so much life and crystalline splendor, right? It's so funny how we like, everyone's like, I don't like cold water. These like internal dialogues you have around being cold, going into cold water, but actually it feels like miraculous when you're in cold water. It's like this, so it's alive, almost crystalline. How else can you explain that, where everything sparkles to life? So yeah, that's nature is everywhere. I just got back from this trip to Peru as well. That was a bit of a work trip and team building trip. And We spent time in the lowland rainforest in the Tambopata area, which is an area we're working to conserve. I've been working off and on in that area for many years. It's actually where I did my master's research. And I have a lot of old friends that are still running around that rainforest trying to do good work. And lots of exciting, neat projects going on, lots of massive trees that are just profound spiritual entities in and of themselves. Like, tree worship is what's your favorite thing about the rainforest? Like, hugging really big trees. It's like these things that are hundreds of feet tall and have these like massive trunks and buttresses that go out even wider than that. You might take 70 people armed to go like all the way around these things. We also spent some fantastic time in the cloud forest, which is the home of Indian bears and orchids and amazing ferns and landscapes of dancing cloud. And you have these viewpoints of where you can look down the valleys and you see the cloud and the fog mist thing like swirling around. And it's just outrageously cool. And then we also spent some time in the Ausangate area, which is I'm horrible with the meters conversion, but I think it's like roughly 4,000 meters. Which I think is like 14,000 feet. I knew the exact feet. It's like between 14,000 feet, which is really high for a sea level dweller, and then between and almost 15,000 feet. Pretty exciting stuff.
Lots of nature. Yeah. And
lots of nature.
I want to definitely hear more about Peru. And part of my brain is still stuck with what you said about nature being your guru. Because funnily enough, I went to a human guru event workshop thing this weekend.
Cool.
Because that is really something that's a huge stretch for me to think about a human, a living human as a guru. So I wanted to experience that. And when we did a meditation there, and we had to connect to our inner divine. A lot of people connected to the guru. And for me, what came up was like this big tree just kind of growing through me, which was so good and so resonates with what you were just saying. So we're both big tree huggers too. No shame in that.
That's an amazing vision, actually. And how did you feel when the sort of tree imagery came to you in terms of connecting to this source of the divine? Was that a surprise?
No, it was not a surprise. And it's an image, the image of the tree that I see more often. So that feels very familiar to me, this idea of, you know, having these deep roots and then flourishing from that. And I'm also noticing just more and more in my day-to-day, and I've seen this with you, Matt, when we went for hikes in California, that I'll just be walking like through our little village and then see, I don't know, a worm or like a tiny little leaf and be like, what? Just mind blown that these creatures exist, right? And how awesome they all are. And so for me, thinking of the divine, it feels very natural that that's nature or tree. And I'm really curious when you say, I see nature as my guru, like, what does that mean for you? How does that show up for you in your day to day?
Yeah, every day. It's like, it's so important to think about how we make this stuff practical. A lot of us have these great ideals and we read exciting books about, lofty philosophy. But what does it mean for us who are like, you know, dealing with dirty diapers and like stuck in traffic? Or hours and hours on Zoom calls and you lose your capacity to ground. Like, what does it mean in an everyday life, everyday situations? I think it means something if you can remember. And I think that's one of the hardest parts for like all of us in terms of those interested in growing and developing our relationship to whatever spirituality means for us. For me, it's, can I remember to get up off of my desk and go outside, look up at the clouds, to observe just little details of nature around, or even immersing myself in just a breath-based space when I'm going for a run. Running has been a very real, like, spiritual practice for me in the last couple of years. And I think it's cool to think about running as something that's like a little bit deeper than just like going for a jog. And I never put earbuds in which is cool if you want to listen to things, and it gets you like embodied and like breathing and feeling. Like some people like that kinetic connection, but I'm really trying to run from a place of like paring down and becoming more naked in relationship to like my environment. So as I'm running, I'll be like breathing and just like feeling all of the hard stuff that comes up with running, because running is hard. It sucks.
It does
no
not.
One likes it, but we do it anyway.
Tonya likes it. Tonya actually likes it.
Oh, you actually?
I love
liar.
It. No, I do love it. I'm not going to tell you for how long I've been running this morning. And I'm actually down to one earplug. I'm now in between those two worlds. I used to run with both earplugs. Now I'm down to one because I want to be connected to nature, but I also want to listen to this podcast. So I'm now...
I know. Yeah. No, totally. It's also dangerous if you're running with two earplugs because you might not hear the car or something behind you. What am I saying? In Switzerland, you probably have just like beautiful carless areas where you can just run freely all the time. Another perk of living where you are. Right?
Just saying.
But it's like there's like when you avail yourself, when you open yourself in that way to nature, to that space with the intention of learning something or of releasing something. Our intention is so important. And for me, my intention is always about like deeply connecting with nature on a regular basis as much as I can, because it's my soul food. Nature and the diversity of life brings me the deepest and most sustainable joy I've ever experienced in life. And for me, guru is teacher. It's revealer of truth. It's the remover of obscurations. There's often this discussion of like guru as the remover of darkness, but how do we talk about darkness? Maybe obscurations are more effective, or conditioned states of mind and being, right? So that's often my intention when I'm like out there, is like, how can I just release again and hit refresh and continue to be open? And things bubble up as they do in the same way that what happens when you're like having a little meditation. It's if you're willing to pay attention enough. So, yeah, that's what it means on a daily basis. Practically, I'm always studying about nature too. Like, I'm always reading science articles, and I've been an avid bird watcher for a really long time. So I'm always like learning about new bird species and where they live, what kind of ecosystems they're in. I'm always reading articles on Manga Bay, this wonderful environmental journalism website that has been operating since 2012, I think. Or 2007, maybe just, maybe Rhett Butler, the founder of That's from the Bay Area, cool tech guy, and the project has ballooned, and they have incredible articles about nature and politics around nature all the time. So it's like an orientation point, right? It's if we can, for me, nature is this like the center point around which I organize the rest of my life. And even on the weekends with my wife and daughter, it's like, we're always like, how do we get out into nature? And before we had our daughter, it was always like, let's go on long hikes. The longer the hike, the better. And now we're still like, how can we take Sparrow on a hike? How can we take her somewhere that brings her into nature and allows us to enjoy nature with her? Right. And then it's, what do you want to do with kids? You don't have to throw them in front of TVs or a tablet. And when you get them out in nature, they're just automatically happy. And there's, I think Swiss schools do this regularly, right? Don't they like bring kids out into nature all the time?
And I'm amazed. This is a thing. My daughter just came back from a trip with her school to the forest, where like 22 students came armed with a Swiss pocket knife and the teacher. Like, where does that happen? Just in Switzerland is where they take 22 students with a pocket knife to the forest. And they came back alive. And happy.
And there were no fingers that were cut off in the process. did she enjoy herself? Has she always enjoyed nature? Is this like part of her?
My son,
happy
my
place?
My son loves it. For my daughter, she also likes to be inside, because she likes the cocoon feeling of being surrounded by, I don't know, creating a little, I don't know, like a place where she can hide. But my son loves it. And for example, with him, I sometimes go on a morning run very early in the morning, maybe 6 a.m. He comes with his bike and joins me. And then we go to the forest and we sit down and listen to the forest waking up. And that's so freaking amazing.
You're gonna make me cry.
No, really, because
that's amazing.
I did that once in Vietnam with a friend when we went to a national park there, and we followed the gibbons because that's the only place where they still have gibbons, right? And they make these beautiful sounds in the morning when they sing, right? So we followed this family.
Yeah. Oh,
we
yeah,
we got up at 4 a.m. and we followed them. And I remember this feeling of the forest waking up. And then I thought, I don't have to go to Vietnam for that. Like, I can do that at my place. And it's so silent. Until the first birds start chirping. And then my son was so in awe with this. So you can do that anywhere.
That's so beautiful. It's like the story of like, how do we find the sacred in our homes, in our home landscape, right? It's so easy for us to fixate on like it being out there or somewhere else. It's like, and the sound of the Swiss forest is so beautiful. Is. Like one of, there's a little bird called like the blue tit. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you, sorry, blue tit. It's like a little like blue with like black on its head and this cute little like perching bird.
Maybe the Blaumeisen.
But they have this little like, whistle. Mm-hmm. It's like something like that. But you hear them even in the city and like in Vienna, they're widespread, but like just so sweet and beautiful, right? It's really, but like appreciating that beauty is just about like, pausing and slowing down enough, right? And really just opening your senses to an experience. And that's something that's so hard for like modern conditioned minds to really do, right?
Do you remember if it was always like that for you, even as a kid, or has your connection to nature shifted at some point and you said, I want to conserve it, I want to be more involved with nature? Has it always been like that?
It's always been like that. I'm sorry. I wish I had some, you know,
don't be sorry.
awakening story. I've just always been passionate about it. And I've always had, just like you said, Ariana, that, wow, how is this real? Does this exist? Like, how does this exist? Kind of feeling. And I remember like having an early realization of like death and impermanence with a little like moth when I was 6 years old. And I cried for it because I really felt that it was like, this beautiful thing is no longer animate. And it's like, I realized that someday I would also be in that place. And so like appreciation for nature has always been, there. And I grew up watching TV over dinner. And my favorite show was Don't Tell My Mom, but my parents were divorced. When you're an only parent, you're like, do whatever you can to survive so you can get 5 minutes after a long day. And back then we didn't have tablets at least, and it was like a little like 6-inch by 10-inch TV, so small thing. But I used to watch this program called Marty Stauffer's Wild America, and it was about just like wolves and bears and deer and everything like this, and the circle of life in that too. So yeah, but since I was a kid, I've always just been obsessed, and it's been fostered along the way, and it's just something I've naturally been gravitated towards, and especially like through my use of psychedelics in high school, a little bit early, probably. We can edit that part out. We don't want the high school students being like, he said, yes, it's okay. It happened in Colorado where we were growing up. But like, since then, I think psychoactive material and plant medicine gives you an extra sensitivity to colorful things, right? It's like, you just have this appreciation for color in a totally different way from those experiences. And so since then, I think I've had an extra love and just deeper appreciation for all of the just wild patterns and colors, the pageant of life itself. Like, you know, when you go scuba diving, you just like see these fish. And it's, oh, Tanya, you seem like you're a scuba diver.
I've done it a couple of times, but yeah, it's amazing.
Right. You're like, and then everyone comes up from the scuba dive and they're like, did you see that? And it's just, everyone's like, yeah. And then there's no words that can really explain that radiance that you were just immersed in.
Talking about super special, impressive nature, maybe this is a good time to dive into your Peru experience or your recent Peru trip a little bit more.
Sure. I mean, it's like the part of Peru that I spent most of the time in is right, the lower elevation rainforest. And it's characterized by big trees and giant macaws flying around, parrots that are over a meter long head to tail, and they're just bright blue or bright green or bright red, and their wings are just multicolored. And they're flying around overhead, and there's, we're walking through forests that have jaguars, puma, and all, everything that's all the big charismatic animals that you can imagine are there. We know that because we have camera traps set up, and we know that they walk through those forests on a regular basis. You're out there and you feel them energetically. But it's the Tambopata area is, so it's like lowland forest, which is characterized by like these amazing, like chocolate milk colored rivers that gently meander and like take the, and then all of a sudden take these really steep turns. So you can get disoriented pretty easily because it has this hairpin turn that happens before you return back to that more gentle direction. And it's a space that's filled with thousands of butterflies. It has one of the highest butterfly diversities in the planet. Something like over like 1,200 species of butterfly are found there. So it's not like everywhere is like a butterfly city, but right over the course of the year, these butterflies emerge, right? And so it's like, when you think, you have to think about it in terms of these patterns of like butterfly eruptions over the course of the year. So it's all in March and May, there's like these 70, and then through the rest of this June, July, August, there's some more. And then October, November, December, there's like other ones. But you show up, you pull your, they love to hang out on the river, and you pull your boat up to a riverbank, and sometimes it's just coated in thousands of butterflies that are all just like flapping their wings. And it's just mind-boggling. And especially you take your little camera, your phone, and you zoom in and do that thing, and you can, you see it in a totally different way. And they also, it's pretty cool, you can sometimes find turtles and like crocodiles because of the butterflies that like collect around their eyes and their nostrils. So you'll see these like turtles with just like 20 butterflies just like sitting on their face or something. And I like to imagine, try to imagine what that would feel like to just have butterflies, like, you know, caressing my face on a regular basis. That sounds relaxing, doesn't it? Like feeling stressed at the office, like just imagine like a bath and butterfly wings or something like that, right?
You just said something about you felt the energetic presence of these beautiful wild animals. Like what does it feel like for you there, you know, when there's a jaguar near or the butterflies image, and they feel very differently?
Yeah, it's what does it mean to be an extrasensory being in a sense, right? When you sense others, like what does that mean? And I think that we all have those capacities. We can all tell ourselves like stories about being, oh, I'm extrasensory. Like I can sense these things. Is it real? To what extent is it real? It's often how real you make it in your mind. But for me, it's like I can feel them. It's like I can feel their heartbeats, and I can feel their muscular feet walking on the ground, and I can feel as if I'm a humble addition. I'm insignificant in their presence. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that it's put in my place. Oftentimes is like what it means to feel them too. It's like you realize that you're really insignificant in this great scheme of things. I actually think that's why people are often afraid of the rainforest, because they realize that the rainforest, they go there and they see how it just churns through embodiments like nobody's business. Just things are born and die and born and die so fast. And you also feel that as a human. You're like, oh, I don't have teeth or talons or anything like this. And there's like large animals that could come and eat me. And right, like that. So it's like for me that feeling them is about placing my imagination sense into who they are and how they're moving around their landscape. And then when you see a footprint, you really register that. You feel it. You can open your senses to what it might be to be that being as well. So I think cultivating that imagination sense in terms of your what if can really help you to feel and connect in that way. And that happens to me just automatically over the course of the years because of this. I think this is an axiom. You become what you study. You have to be really careful what you study because you become it, right? It's like if you're studying when you go into the military, it changes your mind, the central code at which you, in terms of how you operate, right? And or like your particular corporate setting transforms you, be it functional or dysfunctional. Let's not open that can of worms. But I think that's an important thing to remember is it's easier to connect with those things that you have a deep relationship to.
Yeah.
If you've, like, when I've studied, I've looked at like anatomy photos of jaguars over the years, right? So you can see them in three dimensions, their bones and what their skull looks like without flesh, or how the muscles line up and everything like that. So the deeper you know something, the more easy it is to connect to it.
That is true, I think. Yeah. And yet I feel like we all have a wild self. And that's beautiful. Something yeah. that keeps showing up for me in the past couple of months. And I feel like when we're out there in the wilderness, we remember that we have this wild self. And I don't know if there's something you want to say about this, but for me, one of the things that I would love to learn is I can really access this when I'm out there in the wilderness. I just spent a couple of days solo hiking and I really melted with my environment into my.
Oh, yeah.
But then when I come home, I also lose it again. So I wonder if you have this connection to wilderness, are you different when you're out there? Are you able to conserve something that you find out there and bring it back home into your day-to-day life? Can you talk to us about the wild and the wilderness?
That's so beautiful, Tanya. Thank you for, reminding me of that wild core. What does it mean to, I've actually talked with friends and community a lot about this. What does it mean to like rewild yourself? And it's, are there more wild people or less wild people? Are like traditional indigenous communities more wild versus people that are more like connected to like modern society? Great question. Really exciting space to unpack and feel into. And like, how do we bring the wilderness home? And what does it mean to look out at things as if you were like, as if you had wild eyes again, as if you had, and what does that mean? Does that mean, is there an experience of like rapture, right? In your eyes, right? There's something about when you're like, when you're in love with something or in love with somebody, and that you really see them and you feel them. It's like there's love and there's wildness in there, right? I think that being like when you share intimacy with somebody, it's like, that's like pure wilderness, right? Pure wild with somebody. And like, it's, right. I think that's a really great gateway for a lot of people and for understanding what wild is, what it can be, what it means to be just like an animal, in that space. But how do we hold on to that on a regular basis? We have words and we have codes of conduct and norms and mores and all of that. And then society and its walls and all of the structures and rules and regulations for just being here, because how do we exist without them, those things, as a large society, right? Sometimes it's like, I found that if I am out in nature, and I've had some really powerful plant medicine experiences in Peru over the course of the last couple of years, that like those, and I've had those experiences in relationship to like natural places, that like being in that state of mind, opening to spirit and the creative principles and the spirits, whatever, however you want to talk about it, bosses or creates this impression of that wild landscape in your sort of deepest soul place. And then when you come back from that, it's like much more readily available. And for me, that's what I've experienced over the course of the last couple of years, that my connection to that raw and wild and more powerful place has been much easier to connect with as a result, I think, of those places. Perhaps it's just me maturing and it's been years and years in this space and it just becomes easier and easier over time. But it's like it's a practice, right? Just like any of these things. And I think that it's, we lose it, but can you find it again? Do you feel like if you just like pause and, or maybe if you look at a picture from that on your phone or something like that, can you remember and feel that same feeling? Do you feel that way? Or does it like, is it like elusive until you get back out in nature? That's the real trick. So like, how deep is your impression? And do you feel like you can access that on from a stimulus, mm-hmm. right? Like, here's like a feather that I have mm-hmm. on my desk from a lilac breasted roller. And it's this incredible bird from South Africa. And every time I look at it, it's like I can hear the African bush. Mm-hmm. And I'm right there. So I've just surrounded myself with positive stimuli, so that I can remember that wild place. And I've got some tapestries that I hung up to that have like traditional medicine patterns woven into them from the Andes. Like when I look at them, I remember the wisdom energy of the plants that help to create those patterns, right? All of that. I try to create this positive echo chamber where everything helps to remind me of that, like transcendent connection. But I really suck at it most of the time. I'm usually preoccupied with filling out my documents properly, responding to WhatsApp messages, or thinking about what we're going to make for dinner and that being such a big deal. I don't know what I want to make for dinner. I don't care that much. I'm tired. Can someone do it for me, please? Let's just order takeout. Like, again, we're working like this year. Sarah, my wife, has been really committed to doing more, to supporting us to do more at-home cuisine. And I think that's a really beautiful way of staying connected to nature as well. Buy good food. Buy food that's from like real people that live in your community and all of that stuff.
In nature, when I think back to my trip, a lot of options are narrowed down to a handful of choices that you have. For example, if you're carrying all your own food supplies, right? There's not a lot of different things that you can make for dinner, right? So I think a lot of this overload, mental overload, comes from having too many choices at some point in time. And I think in the wilderness, a lot of these things just fade away. You have a set of clothes, you have limited supplies, and you just, you don't have to make that many decisions, and you can just be. And for me, like, the closest proxy I have to this feeling of vastness and wilderness is sleeping outdoors. That's one of my dreams, to make that a regular thing, to sleep on the rooftop. When there's nothing between you and the sky, I think for me, that is the closest proxy, even without being in the forest or in traveling somewhere. I think that's, for me, something to reawaken that sense of wilderness. And it sounds like you have been also traveling quite a bit. So I was wondering, as someone who loves to travel, is traveling a spiritual act for you? Would you say that's true?
Some parts of it.
The jet lag, not so much.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wow. Sometimes the blinding jet lag. That's just, oh my God. I don't know what is going on. Why is like middle of the afternoon? For me, like when I come from like West Coast to Europe, it's totally. It's always like right around 2 p.m. in the afternoon. That's the worst. And you're just like, because back in California, it's 3 and 4 a.m. in the morning, usually, that sort of thing. And you're just like, everything is...
Yes.
Anyway, it gets better if you learn how to work with it. I think the more you do it, the easier it becomes. Yeah, I think travel has been hedonistic over the years. Like, in one sense, like, how can I just consume as many experiences as I can? But it's also been a tremendously rewarding venture into rapture, into just deep love and appreciation of nature and wild places. I've been fortunate to travel to Africa a couple of times on trips sponsored by my grandfather. And because he really he loved Africa as well. He was an avid wildlife photographer and a successful businessman. And just felt like if he didn't send me and my family to Africa, like, he also was like very pessimistic, and he thought like the whole continent was going to erupt in civil war. So he's like, get there before it's too late. So I went there a couple of times in my youth, and then we took one more trip with my mom. And that's actually in 2018, and that's where I proposed to my wife. That's pretty spiritual, having an opportunity to drop a knee. And I proposed to Sarah under the rising full moon in the African bush in Zimbabwe, in the Hwange National Park. And it was just like face meltingly beautiful. We had just seen a leopard perching perfectly on a branch, and the sky was purple and orange and silhouetted trees. And it was like, couldn't be more perfect. So yes, like travel is, I think, really can be a spiritual experience if you relate to it in maybe the right way. And it's like, what are our motives for travel? And I've done a lot of spiritual travel too. Traveling to lead yoga retreats is something I've done over the years. Traveling to study yoga is something I've done. Traveling to South India, to study Ashtanga yoga and traveling to like Dharamsala in North India to spend time sitting with His Holiness the Dalai Lama, traveling to sit at a meditation retreat center and learn more about those things. But I think that there's something important about the experience of rapture. I've used this word a lot today, right? In relationship to the spiritual experience. At least in the yoga traditions, this kind of rapturous experience is associated with a suspension of the thinking mind, where you just open into the vastness, right? And that's often referred to as Nirodha, right? And the classic definition of what yoga is from the Yoga Sutra is yoga is chittavritti nirodha, right? Yoga is the cessation of the flipping or the turnings of the mind. And then the cessation of is the experience of Nirodha, which I've learned is like just awe or rapture in the same way. Like when you are in a rapturous moment, the mind stops making subject and object out of the raw apprehension. For you, what are the things that you do that help connect you to that? It's not the same. There's not the same like lock and key relationship to nature or things for everybody. But I think it's really interesting to look at when those lock and key things, that kind of rapturous space, is strictly human associated, right? Is part of the human-centric worldview or the anthropocentric worldview. And a lot of people are just only into like human things. And that's so funny because really like all human things come from nature anyway, right? Where do your clothes come from? Oh, it's this cool cotton shirt or hemp shirt or whatever it is. Or my gold necklace. Like, where did that come from? That came from nature somewhere, right? Oh my God. So you mean I love nature even though I didn't think I did? Whatever. Deep down, root cause. Kind of things. But I wish I could travel the world more and just like love it up and share that with the world. Have you found a way to get paid and do that as like someone who's not an influencer?
No.
I would love that. But traveling is so great too, and something that I think is, yeah, just medicinal. Helps you realize that it helps humble you, and it helps you realize that there's a lot of other people out there in the world that also have urgent needs, right? And are living their lives and have their own concerns. And like, that's really important to remember and to really deeply feel. I think as somebody who's interested in spirituality, interested in growth, remember you're on this planet with a lot of other people and your problems that are so huge and so important. It's remember, place it in the context, right? Those kinds of things. And Ariana, I know that it's like you've done this like crazy deep work with a lot of homeless people too, and a lot of bringing the consciousness to these people that are suffering deeply. And I don't know, do you feel like that, yeah, that community is somehow a relevant part of our relationship to spirituality in modern times?
Yeah, I think what it did for me, so what I was doing is I was basically just working or volunteering in a soup kitchen, and then started talking to a lot of people that were homeless or had experienced homelessness, and then realizing just our human connection, right? Just realizing, oh, we see homelessness as this abstract thing. And really, it's just very interesting individuals that we don't see as humans anymore, right? We dehumanize them and see it as a problem. And so for me, connecting to that and being in the discomfort of that, I think that's what made it spiritual for me. It's like, it's not a fun thing to do. It's not like, oh, I'm going to scroll on Instagram and it's like instant gratification. It's fucking hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to be privileged and then to sit with someone who's like, yeah, I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight, and still be in connection with that. I think that's to strengthen that muscle of being in those situations. I think I had a spiritual mentor in Amsterdam who told me once that one of my biggest learnings would be to be with other people suffering, to acknowledge there is suffering in the world. And it's not for me to take all of that on my shoulders, because that's my tendency. And then the funny thing is, this morning I did an energetic healing reading with a very dear friend of Tanya. And one of the things he said to me is that one of the things I'm actually really good at, that's an inherent talent of mine, is to take that pain and that misery and turn it into something positive. And I think that's what I was able to do with the, with, you know, homelessness in San Francisco. And that's what I now feel called to do with around this theme of nature. And I don't know in what shape or form it is, but I have a lot of, in German, Weltschmerz, weight of the world, when it comes to what's happening to our planet. And so to rather than drown in that pain, to see, okay, what's the beautiful thing I can create from that? And I don't know exactly what that is, but it feels very similar to, you know, when I ended up in San Francisco and seeing this, all the pain and suffering on the streets. And then rather than moving away from it, moving towards it, that's what I feel is the movement I'm in now. And I'm curious to see where this will land, but the San Francisco experience gives me hope that it will land in a beautiful, positive place somehow.
What you're saying makes me think about the importance of leaning into discomfort. And as a runner, it's like,
oh, yes,
it's like you have to be okay with that. And there's like spiritual gold in that too, right? There's and you can also become a little masochistic probably. Let's find all of this uncomfortable
you need to be a little bit masochistic.
Like, but yeah, it's just, I think it's an important subject because I think a lot in terms of spirituality, right? I think a lot of us want to like, I just want to go where it feels nice and where it just feels like sparkly all the time and where there's rainbows and fruits falling from the trees. And so, yeah, talk about the spiritual bypass. What about your inner child? How are they feeling? What about your grappling with reality that there's a lot of suffering in the world? And what does that mean, especially from a privileged perspective too? What does it mean for you? And how do you wrestle with that? And hopefully make a difference in the world as a result of how you're being, so that your spirituality becomes embodied as much as, and it doesn't mean that you need to be serving soup in a soup kitchen, right? It's, you can still be a servant of the world and a servant of consciousness through wherever you are, whether it's working at a fast food restaurant or in a high paced corporate environment, right? So in fact, sometimes those places, those high paced, high impact corporate environments need it more than anything. I think we've all decided that trickle down economics is maybe not effective, but is trickle down like consciousness something that's effective? Can we influence like corporate spaces to like awaken and support like well-being and all of that, like in different ways with their communities and their cultures that they're stewards of? I don't know. You both had a big nod. You think so?
Doing that. we're doing little bits happening? Of that. Well, I think that's when Tanya and I do work with corporates or corporate clients, individuals, that's always something we try to do. It's not just be like, here's the course we're teaching, because that's what we mostly do. Like we lead workshops or do one-on-one coaching, but always like sneak in. I know we've been on two conferences where we would do workshops about listening skills and then sneak in a meditation where people like learn to listen to themselves. And it's always in the back of our minds too.
That's true. To do that. And also I feel for me, I've been on a journey to start melting these two worlds together more and more, even with nature. Because since I'm leading a lot of workshops, I have seen the difference when I'm teaching workshops in a corporate setting, in an office space, versus now I just came back from a weekend in the Swiss mountains where I'm taking one of my classes to spend two weekends there. And like just the act of traveling there, people leave behind a lot of things on the journey to this beautiful place, and it's immersed in nature. And I feel like whatever we teach there, it lands so differently. If we did the exact same course in an office setting, the transformation wouldn't be as deep. And so I feel like for me, I want to do more of that. I want to take people out of their office space and take them back into nature and give them back. Like they really, it feels like they're taking their first breath in a while, just from the frenzy of checking their phone and all of the things. And usually I start with the question of what do you want to leave behind? And it's so interesting to see that they're really doing this as a conscious act. And I love it. I would love to teach more in nature in my Birkenstocks and less in a corporate setting. That's one of the perks that I'm giving to myself as a solopreneur.
Yes. Let's go. Let's do it. Yeah. That's, and it's like when you feel nature and when you feel the world in those ways, I think it humanizes you, right? And it sensitizes you to your community as well, right? It's like, oh, it's like, yeah, nature is beautiful. And like, oh, like we've all been stuck in this crazy place together. And you look over and you see your boss or you see your colleagues and you're all having that moment of just, oh, we let something go. We're actually feeling better. And so, oh, wow, there's something more important happening like deep down in our realities. I've always thought about how you just like, end up in these corporate relationships because you're like, I need a job. Like, sure, it's a good company. They're very well respected or whatever, but like, actually are oftentimes like have really dysfunctional like cultures.
Totally.
And then all of a sudden you're living, you're stuck in this dysfunctional family. And you're sometimes, and you're like with these people for 8 hours a day in the office. That was back in the day when everyone worked in offices. Now it's a little different, right? But I've had that experience of spending 9 hours of my life every day in an office, right? Like working the corporate America, like 8 to 5 routine. And it can be scary, right? Cause you're like, wow, like here I am. This is really, what do? Like I need my paycheck, but also I'm stuck with a bunch of people that I don't resonate with. How did I find myself? The recipe for soul death very quickly, but also like, right? That's where the opportunity is, those difficult spaces. What if we had different relationships to the corporate space towards what it means to be a boss, towards what it means to be an employee, and all of that? Perhaps like if you elevate those cultural spaces, if you have more conscious people in general or in those, especially those pivotal roles, you can create a lot of positive influence and make a lot of happier people and run happier businesses. Right. What happens when a business is happy is it seems like it does better business. I think I haven't conducted the research around it, but I'll bet it's like good business is always built on good relationships. Those are so vital. But Tanya, I remember listening to a podcast with you not too long ago where you talked about your like loss of self almost in your kind of corporate experience. And it sounded like there was this mix of like real beauty and like you enjoyed that experience, like it was the right thing at that right time in your life, but also at the same time, something like you had, that's like you had that like high connection to your corporate life, but at the same time, like maybe it was too much, right? Maybe.
Yeah.
Is there something we can learn there?
I guess the word that pops up in my head is ego. And I think a lot of what I was looking for in the corporate space is stuff that was feeding my ego. And I feel like I'm working on deflating it and not needing this kind of reassurance from the outside world in forms of likes, promotions, all of that stuff. I felt like I was playing a video game, like from one level to the next. And it ended with a game over in my case because I had a burnout. But apart from that, it feels like to me, when we learn how to let go of this ego that is standing between us and just being one with everything that is basically also a path that will lead us back to more connection with nature, to being more human, to flipping on that human switch again. And I think that is also possible in a corporate environment. I'm not saying everybody needs to go and live in, I don't know, in the forest or something. But what I feel is if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, being in the corporate space, because, for example, from a deficiency of self-love and if you have self-love, I think that's the prerequisite to also love others well, right? If sure. You're not in a, mm-hmm. in a scarcity there, then you can be in a corporate setup and it can be fine and you can, and good things can come from that. But I feel like what I'm sensing there is a lot of scarcity mode, a lot of ego taking up a lot of space. And I'm not saying that I'm over this, but I'm working on it. And I feel like that was what this phase was about, I felt good at that time, but I think the part that was pleased was the ego part more and more. And that kind of was crushed a bit in the burnout. And then afterwards, I had to also reestablish my self-worth outside of this corporate patterns. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of addressing the whole of you. Right. That's what, I mean, I feel like nature is really good at helping anybody find that, right? It's like, when we're just living in these little cycles that are just lost in the city, you forget that expansiveness, yes, that connection.
And since you just said cycle, right? I think that is another thing that I would like to throw into the mix here is, in the corporate world, I feel like often there is no such thing as a cycle because it's always push, 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 push. And there's never some sort of like rest, right? Huge. And so I feel like if we really connect back to our cyclic nature, like for us women, of course, also the female cycle, but the cycle of the month, the moon, whatever it is, like we're cyclic beings, but I feel like we forgot how to rest. We forgot how to like work in these cycles. And I think that is so against our nature. What do you think?
Absolutely. I have experienced that in many jobs as well, including the present, right? It's just, what's the horizon? Do you ever arrive? Do you ever end up in a situation where you can then finally say, take that big inhale and that big exhale and be like, look at what we have accomplished, right? It's like, maybe we have an end of the year review. We have an end of the year party. But why don't we have like end of the year, 2 weeks off or whatever, where literally the entire company says, pause, let's reflect, everybody do some writing exercises, like think about what you've done over the course of the last year and like really feel, breathe it, and then relax and then chill. Get like a fresh mind, go to the beach, whatever, go to the spa, the sauna, Yeah, what would that look like? That's a beautiful question though, right? To support cyclical behavior in modern living a little bit more. I guess we do that with holidays in some ways. Is that what we're supposed to do? But I don't know if it really serves the purpose of a greater awareness of a cycle in that way and the health of working hard and then enjoying the fruits of your labor. That's cool. And I think what I've been exposed to a lot over the last couple of years is this way of framing it in terms of what do you do to resource yourself as well. So if you're thinking about a cycle of like where you are actively going out into the world and then you find ways of like nourishing and replenishing yourself. Maybe as you were saying, Tanya, it's like going out into the wilderness for like just a few days by yourself. Doesn't have to be 3 weeks or whatever it is. Or maybe it's you need 4 hours to just do nothing at your home and make art or organize things or lay in the grass and look at the beetles and the little watch the dew droplets on the moss for a little while, whatever it is.
I call this pockets of freedom. I just wrote about it because I feel like you need it. Like, what is the smallest form of freedom that you can find? And it can be just that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's, I always like to joke about like people going out for their smoke breaks here. People don't smoke a lot in the US, but they used to. In Europe, people are still, you always, but like in the office, the people who, when I was in my heavy corporate America space, like the people who got out of the office the most to get the fresh air were the smokers. And it's like, there they are out there doing their pranayama with their cigarettes.
It's ironic.
But they're like, it's ironic, right? But they're also like getting some fresh air in there, and they got up out of their desk. They escaped the concrete box for a little while and they felt fresh air on their skin. They got sunshine on their face. Maybe in some ways they're getting a little bit more benefits spiritually than somebody who's locked in the cage all day long or whatever. I say tongue in cheek.
Yeah, I feel like I still have like a list of 10 topics I would like to explore. And also, let's be mindful of the time. We always love to close up with asking, after this whole conversation that we have, is there still something where you feel like it would be good to share this or something you want to emphasize from what you said earlier, just like a final thought to this conversation?
I just feel like these are some of the most important conversations to be having in our times. Yeah. And I feel like our conversation just began. Can I come over and I'll see you in a few hours? Let's carry on with part B. This is what makes meaning in life. And I've always been interested in interfaith dialogues and what's the difference between spirituality and being religious, and can a spiritual person have open dialogue and conversations with a religious person and vice versa? All of that stuff. But for me, I would love it if we can continue to make this more and more commonplace in the world. And so that as we're even conducting business and, you know, meeting new people, we realize that behind those eyes or inside of those eyes and those hearts and these other beings are these like wells of curiosity and feeling and depth, and like that our relationship to spirit can be something that can also be a substantial part of our lives and things we talk about at a party without being like weird and like without it being something that creates discomfort. But like, I love to talk about that stuff with friends over a glass of wine or whatever. When we're on a hike, it's like, let's keep going. And that's one of the reasons I loved teaching yoga retreats, right? It's wow. We have a whole week together to just be excited and open and explore these places together. So I can't imagine how you all working together and offering your trainings and your workshops it's probably just such a fantastic time. And I think your clients don't understand how lucky they are to have such brilliant and wise and inspired people like yourself, practitioners, right? People that are really interested in doing the work, right? It's endless, right? And it's like, this is just the beginning, and let's see how we feel next year. And then what about the following year? And like, how is this journey like continuing to unfold and enrich us? And that's all super exciting stuff, right? It can be like, it's that, those pockets of freedom and that sense of freshness that just brings us that eternal youth feeling, right? If you really keep going back into it. And so I feel deeply inspired by my time with you both today. And what a sincere privilege. I look forward to part two, cool, where I can hear more about what you've been doing. And maybe we can do part two in our Birkenstocks, like out on the beach somewhere together.
Thank you for listening to Living the Unseen, the podcast in which Ariana and I explore the role of spirituality in everyday life. Stay tuned for our next episodes to meet more inspiring guests and hear more anecdotes from our personal lives to inspire your own spiritual journey. And if you want to dive deeper, we invite you to sign up for our newsletter on our website, livingtheunseen.com, to read more about our podcast guests, hear our personal reflections on the episodes, and be the first one to know when a new episode comes out. And lastly, we are immensely grateful for your support. If you enjoy our content, we would love for you to rate us with 5 stars on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and gives Ariana and me some extra motivation on our podcast journey. Until next time, and keep living the unseen.